had the name Nehemia about the good things he did that brought Nechama to Klal Yisrael. He was in charge of the rebuilding of the wall. Thank you so much. And that brought a Nechama. It brought consolation to Klal Yisrael. Okay, it's not so strange to be called Nehemia. We find many times people are named after a great thing they did. However, he says, the strange thing, he's like this, Im Kabbalah Nekabel. If Chazal had a Mesora about this, that Nehemia is Zerubbabel, then I certainly would accept. Im Svara, but if they came up with this from a point of Svara, that logically he's the man that, other than Ezra, he's the main man in the time for Klal Yisrael, so this was probably, if it wasn't Ezra, it was probably Zerubbabel. If it was a Svara, so he says, I already wrote the different things I mentioned now, he says, it looks unlikely to me. The Hashem Yisbarach Yudei HaEmes. Kadosh Baruch Hu knows the truth, whether Nehemia was Zerubbabel or not. Kein Daiti Listor Divrei Chazal, Chas V'Shalom, it could be he means that Hashem knows the emes that I have no intent to go against Chazal. Shekulam emes, ela yesh mehem kabbalah v'yesh mehem svara. Some things Chazal say are a kabbalah. And then they had a masorah, if you have a masorah, or maybe they understood it was some type of ruach hakodesh. But some things they say is a svara. Svara, you could be cholik, he says. It's interesting, you saw it over here. The yesh mehem svara. Im kabbalah nekabel. The im svara, drush v'kabel svar. In other words, if it's something which was a fact, which was passed down, ish mipi ish, that Nehemia is Zerubbabel, so then we'd accept that. But we don't have anything that makes that absolutely clear. And since we don't know if that Chazal meant it as an absolute factual statement, it was the Kabbalah, or maybe they said it Misvara, and let's add in that maybe there's a depth and understanding to what they meant. Sometimes we find Chazal, this person is that person, and really it means that they came from the same Shoresh Neshama, or they were connected in their spiritual realm, and they were doing things that were dovetailing with each other's mission in this world. So we're not going to take it as a given that Nehemia is Zerubbabel, says Moshe David Vali. And he brings his last proof. He says, if you look in Sefer Divrei Hayomim, there's a list of the descendants of Zerubbabel. Zaro shel Zerubbabel, and when it talks about Zerubbabel there, the word Nehemia doesn't come up, the word Chachalia doesn't come up. And
Quick question. Where did David, what's his last name?
Moshe Chaim. Oh, Moshe David Vali.
Where did he get his theory of Zerubbabel? He didn't just make it up.
His theory is that he's not Zerubbabel. He says, up till now we have two characters, Zerubbabel and Ezra. Now we get a new character, Nehemia.
But where did he get, he doesn't feel somebody to say is his source for this idea?
Again. Okay. He says, Nehemia is Nehemia.
He's the first one to say that.
The burden of proof is on somebody that's
going to
say that.
Nehemia is Nehemia. The psukim will call him Nehemia ben Chachalia. You don't need any proof to call him Nehemia ben Chachalia. So the thing is that there's a Gemara.
I'm missing. Who's the first one to say that he's also Zerubbabel?
Ah, so that's in there's a Gemara that says that Nehemia is Zerubbabel.
Okay.
So he's saying that perhaps that's either not meant to be taken literally, or maybe it was a logical deduction that he's the most likely one to be the person involved here for Klal Yisrael other than Ezra, but he has his hesitations. So he says that he's going to explain the storyline, assuming that Nehemia is not Zerubbabel. Nehemia is Nehemia. Now, we explained, for example, that when we went with this explanation, that Nehemia is Nehemia, and with that, we explained up till now, that there was a pivotal point in the life of Nehemiah, when he met these people that came from Eretz Yisrael, and he asked them, oh, how are Klal Yisrael doing over there, and how's Yerushalayim? And they came and they said to him, oh, you have no idea, the remnant of the Shevi, those people who were taken captive, they're in terrible straits, and the city has never been rebuilt from the time of Bayis Rishon's destruction, and in other words, the walls of the city have not been rebuilt, only the Beis HaMikdash was rebuilt, and not the city itself, not the walls. And the doors of the entrances are still burned out, and it's terrible, terrible streets. Mm-hmm. So I was looking in a beautiful sefer. Anyone who is looking for an art school sefer to purchase, everyone is well-known. Rabbi Schwab has his books on prayer. So he has a sefer also on Ezra Nehemiah.
Charles?
So, is it Rav Shimon Schwab? I think it's Rav Shimon Schwab, yeah. So he. So I was looking over, I went through the first parak that we've learned so far in the Sefer, and I see that he goes 100% with Chazal that say that Nehemiah is Rubavel. So he takes that part of the storyline entirely differently. He says these people that came to Bavel, it wasn't that this man Nehemiah had an epiphany that he suddenly heard about the situation there at Yisrael, and it took it to heart, and he decided he's going to make this his mission in life, he's going to go intervene, and maybe perhaps this is why he is the pourer of the wine for the king, to be able to use that opportunity to speak to the king about getting permission to rebuild the walls. No, says Rabbi Schwab, making a lot of conjectures, but based on the idea that Nehemiah is Rubavel, he says, it wasn't that by half in chance he met these people that came from Eretz Yisrael to Shushan. They came from Eretz Yisrael to Shushan to find him. Why did they want to find him? Because he was their leader that brought them there originally. Well, what's he doing back in Shushan? So says the Rabbi Schwab, we'll have to conjecture that he jumped ship. That's a big conjecture. For some reason, he left the Yidden in Eretz Yisrael and he went back to Shushan. That's a big conjecture. But if according to Chazal, that it's Zerubbabel, it's a big question. What's Zerubbabel doing in Shushan? Zerubbabel already set them up in Eretz Yisrael. He should be their leader in Eretz Yisrael. So based on that, by the way, is another kasha on saying that Nehemiah is Zerubbabel. He's in the wrong part of the world. If Nehemiah is Zerubbabel, so he should be with them in Eretz Yisrael. So says Rabbi Schwab, we don't know why, but apparently, according to that opinion of Chazal, he picked up and left the Yidden in Eretz Yisrael, even though he had been their leader in the first wave of Aliyah, and he moved back to Bavel. And now, being that he was someone who was respected already in the court of the king from way back, and he was the one chosen by the king and entrusted, if you remember, the king only trusted him to give him all the kalim of the Beis HaMikdash that had been saved up since Nebuchadnezzar's times, all these golden kalim, and he entrusted to Zerubbabel, he was the person the king trusted. So they came to inspire him to intervene by the king. It was a whole plan. It's a whole different story. It's not that he himself had an epiphany and now suddenly he was a regular guy that happened to be pouring the wine for the king and now he was inspired. It's that they came directly to find him to tell him, you have a job to finish. You brought us to Eretz Yisrael. You were in dire straits. Help us out. But now, Rav Schwab runs into another problem. He says, one second. Why is he asking them about the city? He knows exactly what's going on in the city. He was the man in charge over there. What's he asking about the city? Why does he have a hava amina? What is he even thinking that there's a problem with the city? And what are they telling him, this big news, that the city hasn't been rebuilt, the walls are not rebuilt, the doorways of the entrances to the city are still burned out from the time of Nebuchadnezzar? He knows this himself. He was there. What's he so surprised about? Why is he ripping his clothing and fasting and this is old news. So what's going on? So he says another conjecture, which is another rioter of David Wali, that it's very difficult to say that it's really Zerubbabel. He makes another conjecture. He says apparently there was some type of attack on the Jews in Yerushalayim after Zerubbabel apparently left Eretz Yisrael and went to Bavel. And he had heard about this attack, and he's asking, how did they weather this attack? Where is this attack recorded? Nowhere. But apparently there was an attack, otherwise why is he asking about it? So he says that which it says that the walls are broken through and the doorways are burned out, that's from the new attack, not from what was way back. Because what was way back, he already knew what was going on because he had been there. So we have really two different ways of understanding the storyline. But definitely the pshuto is much more pashut if you say that Nehemiah is the new person, Nehemiah. But without Rav Moshe David Vali, we wouldn't have the guts to suggest that, being that Chazal say Nehemiah is Zerubbabel. So Nehemiah is Zerubbabel. So I have no problem understanding why Rabbi Schwab took all these steps, and he's right. You have to cheshbon all this out. If really it's Zerubbabel, then we have a lot of problems. What's Zerubbabel doing in Shushan, and what's he asking them about the walls of the city? He knows. So you have to make all these assumptions. But you understand better now what Rav Moshe David Vali is doing. As a bracket, as an aside, but an important aside, we, the English-speaking public, have the luxury of being able to study not only from the classic sources, but there's a lot of rich literature that's produced on in English. And there's two ways to study that literature. You could just say, I want to learn Sefer Nehemiah, so I'm going to get Rav Schwab on Nehemiah, and I read it. And it's beautiful, and it says Shiurim on Nehemiah. If you have the ability to learn the sugya, to see the mefarshim, to see the chazal, to see what's going on, like we have, Baruch Hashem, the ability here, and then you go through what a sefer like this says, then you can appreciate it so much more. So if I just would have read Rav Schwab on Nehemiah, I would have just taken for granted, oh, of course, that's the only way to look at it. But now that we saw it in the context of the other Mefarshim, now we understand it's a multifaceted discussion. The last point he makes there, also a very different point. What was Nehemiah so worried about, the Jewish people's plight? It was the remnants of the captivity. So we explained, based on Rav David Vali and the Malbim, the remnants of the captivity from the original captivity that Nebuchadnezzar took captive. And that group of people, we explained, were still under jurisdiction of the locals, as opposed to the people that came with Zerubbabel, who were governed by Zerubbabel, that's how we understood up till now, and still governed by Zerubbabel in the time of Nehemiah, who's a different person, and the people who were brought up by Ezra were governed by Ezra. So the people who were under the sovereignty of Ezra were fine. The people under the sovereignty of Zerubbabel were fine. It was the Sheiris of the Shvia, the people that were left from the original groups of people that were left there to cultivate the land with Gedaliah ben Achikam, those original people that were there the whole time, those people were being looted by the Goyim and were in dire straits.
Also, those are the people who were intermarrying. Zerubbabel's people and the one who went to Babel, they weren't intermarrying.
I don't know. Do we know if the intermarriage was limited to certain populace?
Well, right after Ezra finishes building, all of a sudden he's surprised. I didn't know this was all going on, as all these intermarriages, so I assumed that he assumed that they weren't intermarrying.
Yeah, but it could be with people that were with the Zerubbabel group also, right? The Zerubbabel group came years before Ezra.
But the ones who came to Babel with Zerubbabel, or the ones who...
I don't know of anyone that came to Babel with Zerubbabel, just a few people that came here to visit.
They're going with the locals.
Right. So we have an issue of intermarriage there that Ezra came to
But it's a surprise to Ezra.
Yes. It was a surprise to Ezra. He came, he was
so
focused on
the
building.
To Nehemiah. He didn't know this was going on.
I don't know. It doesn't talk about if it's a surprise to Nehemiah. No, the psukim here don't necessarily refer to intermarriage. Although you're right that Rav David Vali explained that when he told them that the nation, that the Yidden there were in dire straits, he understood that meant they're also in dire spiritual straits. Mm-hmm. So perhaps that's what you're saying, that maybe he wasn't aware of the extent of the intermarriage problem. That could be. Very good. Okay. So 1 second. So what were we just saying? That, right, but on the other hand, Rabbi Schwab coming from Chazal saying that Zerubbabel is Nehemiah. So he says, that the people, so he says that these people who are in dire straits, who are the remnant of the captivity, he says it was this news that there had been a attack on the city that he was asking them about, and apparently people were taken captive, and the remnants of that captivity from that attack were in dire straits. It's all late breaking news. According to Rabbi Schwab, all of this information was late breaking news, as opposed to, if we go with the other Mepharshim here, it was old news, and this person, Nehemiah, wasn't probably ever even there in Eretz Yisrael. Okay. The other difference is now when we start Perek Beis, and we start to discuss the conversations between Nehemiah and the king of Babylon, Dariavesh, so it makes a difference who's talking. Is this Zerubbabel, who was a relied upon, trusted advisor of the king in the past, and now is back pouring wine for the king, but is someone who has a say in political matters and has been trusted to be the officiating officer, the top officer over the Middle Eastern division of the empire of at least of the Jewish people that were sent there? Or is he just someone that happens to be a butler in the palace who really has no business opening his mouth about anything? No one asks the butler to give a political opinion about foreign policy. So that is a big difference who this Nehemiah is. If he's Zerubbabel, so then he is a respected advisor of the king. If it is Nehemiah, so then he is just a butler. Okay. Now, last thing we saw at the end of Perek Aleph was the beautiful tefillah of Nehemiah that ends asking Hashem to help him in his approaching the king. And that was Pasuk Yud Aleph. And I think it's a beautiful pasuk. I actually wrote it into my siddur, the beginning of Shacharis. This last pasuk, Nehemiah Aleph Yud Aleph. I wrote it there. Sometimes maybe I'll be able to actually say it at the beginning of davening, before the bracha of Baruch Shamar. I'm not suggesting adding psukim into the text of Sukkot Zimra officially. I'm not making a new siddur, you know. But in my own siddur, I wrote this is a good pasuk to say before you start Shacharis. At least up the last couple of words. And they take a look at the pasuk, Aleph Yud Aleph, Ana Hashem. That's a good way to start today. Tehi na oznecha kasheves el tfilasi. May your ear be, lend a listening ear to my prayers. El tfilas abdecha, to the prayers of your servant. That's Nechem referring to himself, or if you put this in your siddur, that's you referring to yourself. The el tfilas abadecha, and to the prayers of the other servants of Hashem all around the world, the worldwide prayer organization, the WWPO. I don't know if it exists, but we can make it. Vel tfilas avadecha, hachafetzim liyira eshmecha. Your servants that pray to you, that desire to fear your name. The hatzlicha na la'avdecha hayom. And please give me hatzlacha today. Wow, what a wonderful prayer for the beginning of the day. I put that in my siddur. I didn't put the end of the pasuk because it doesn't have as much pertinence. Utnehu, this is a continuation of Nehemiah's prayer. Utnehu lerachamim lefnei ha'ish hazeh. And place, he's talking about himself in the third person, he means place me in a light of mercy in front of the king. Ve'ani ha'yisi mashkel ha'melech. And I was at that point the butler pouring the wine for the king. So,
what does it mean? Who's the
Ishazeh? The Ishazeh is the king, Daryavesh. Why is he used the words with Neha Ishazeh? So it's suggested by the Mepharshim that it's a play on the words in Chumash that Yaakov Avinu, when he sent his sons down the second time to visit the viceroy of Egypt, he said, "V'kel shaka yitein lachem rachamim lefnei ha'ish." And so therefore, this is a biblical reference that Nehemiah is referring to the lashon of Yaakov Avinu when he had to approach a very powerful person, when he was sending his children to approach the viceroy of Egypt. Very, very powerful person, and it was very delicate how the conversation was going to go over there, and especially since they had a job to bring back Shimon was stuck there. They were in a sticky situation. And so they really needed rachamim from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that the king, the viceroy of Egypt, would take positively to their presentation. So too, over here, Nehemiah is using that reference. Now that's a fascinating thing because it seems to give us a light into the mind of Nehemiah. Nehemiah sees himself going in front of King Dariavesh, similar to the role of the brothers when they came to ask something of the viceroy of Egypt to let their brother Shimon out and to bring home food. He's putting himself in a historical perspective. This is not the first time a Jew had to go in front of a king and ask him for help. And it is interesting that, and this I think I saw in a different sefer, on a different English sefer on Nehemiah, that I started looking at, that points out that in a certain way, Nehemiah's role here is going to be somewhat similar to the role of Mordechai and Esther. Mordechai and Esther also, they were the Jewish people connected to the monarch, and they were able to help the Jewish people in general in a major way and save Am Yisrael. They were able to save Am Yisrael. So on this Nekuda, there is another point that's worth making about Nehemiah and his role as the wine pourer of the king, which is how he's introduced over here. V'ani hayiti mashkel ha-melech. And that is that we find another name of Nehemiah. And this is Hatar Shata. Hatar Shata. Gemara Kiddushin Tamach Tesam with Beis. Rashi tells us Nehemiah is called Hatar Shata. Why? So
what language is that?
It seems to be a Aramaic, but it's a combination of two words. Shata is to drink, and Hatar is from the word heter. He had a license to drink. Now, this doesn't mean he had an ID that showed he was over 18. This means that even though he was a Frum Yid, and this is in the time that it's usher for a Frum Yid to drink, even Stam Yenam of Goyim, not only wine that they pour at Avodah Zarah, which is the Issur D'Oraisa, but any wine that is being handled by Goyim, it's usher to drink. And obviously all the wine in the palace is being handled by Goyim. As the wine pourer of the king, it wasn't just the job to pour the wine. It wasn't just that he had one of those like cloth napkins over his arm, and he knew how to hold the bottle in that funny position for the wine to come out just so, but it meant also, like we know, there was a beef eater in the palace, that the beef eater had to eat the beef to make sure that he would be the one to be affected by it if it had some type of bad health ramifications. So they also had a wine taster, and the wine taster wasn't just there to make sure the wine tasted good enough. It was also to make sure that no one had poisoned the wine. Because any food that's going to go directly to the king is very dangerous. There's a possibility that someone that wants to do the king in will poison the king. In fact, we know from that very time period, in Achashverosh's time, the father of Dariavesh, there was an attempt to assassinate King Achashverosh by putting poison in the water which was being brought to him. So it was not a far-flung idea that someone may try to poison the drink of the king. Right? That was the plan of Bigtan Vaterish. So, says Rashi, being that he was the Mashkel HaMelech, Hayatzarech Lishtois Koidem, he had to taste the wine before it was given to the king. Shelo Yachshaduhu Shema Hitil Sam HaMavitz B'Mashkel HaMelech. It wasn't just a concern, maybe someone else poisoned it. There was a concern that the butler who pours the wine himself may be bribed into poisoning the king. So even if he's the one who's taking it out, he's the trusted guy to take it out of the big barrel of wine, the king's wine, that they had guards to make sure that was protected, but it goes through his hands before it goes to the king's mouth. He could slip a little bit of cyanide into the cup and nobody would know. And therefore, to make sure he didn't do that, he has to taste it himself. This is the old story by Eliezer Eved Avraham and visiting Rivka's family in Aram Naharaim, where he came to visit, and they tried to poison him. And Besuel had the plate poisoned, and he was supposed to eat the food and die. And what happened? The mouse switched the plate, and Eliezer said he's not willing to eat until they strike a deal about the kala. And in the meantime, I guess Besuel couldn't hold back from eating. The food was probably very mechubed food, nice grill, maybe some nice chalent. I don't know what they served. And Besuel ate it, not realizing the malach had switched it, and that was the end of Besuel. So this is an old trick. And therefore, being that that was his job, there was no way he was going to have that position if he wasn't going to be able to taste the wine. But halakhically, he wasn't allowed to taste the wine. So the rabbis gave him a special rabbinic dispensation. This is very unusual. Says Rashi in Kiddushin Tam of Testament Beis, Hey Tirulo, they gave him a special permission, Lishtos Yayin Shel Goyim, to drink the wine of the Goyim. And that's why his name was Hatashata. Now, why does that explain why his name was Hatashata? I think the reason why it explains that's why his name was Hatashata, besides the pshat, that the words Hatashata means permission to drink, was that no one should learn from this tzaddik that, oh, this tzaddik, he has the job of pouring the wine for the king, and obviously that means he's drinking from it, so I don't have to be more from than him, right? So they gave him that name so everyone should know he has a special heter. No one should come and say, oh, Nehemiah drinks the Stam Yayin, so I'll also drink the Stam Yayin. No. They started calling him Hatar Shata. Perhaps the whole heter came with the clause, and we're going to start calling you Hatar Shata. So everyone should know, you have a heter. Reb Chaim Kanievsky, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha, in his Sefer Taima Dikra, says something based on the ideas we thought of ourselves, and says that perhaps, being that Tayavish was the son of Achashverosh, and we know that Bigthan and Teresh tried poisoning Achashverosh, perhaps it was from that event that this rule was put into place that the wine of the king must be tasted, the drinks of the king must be tasted by the person serving the drinks before the king drinks from it. Because Gemara Yud Gimel and Megillah tells us, like we said, Yud Gimel and Beis, that was the plan of Bigthan Vaseir. So that's the Chaim Kanievsky's additional point over here. Okay, so now we're ready for Perek Beis. And there's an interesting thing, one last date before we can compare the first pasuk in Perek Beis. What date, anyone remember what date was it that we saw this tefillah, this long tefillah of Nehemiah when he was acting with all of the Darkei Avelos and Tzom? What was the date? Does anybody remember?
I think it was 1 year before, no?
What was the date?
Oh, 10th of Kislev.
Where does it say it?
In first pasuk of Perek.
Let's check it out. Vahi Bechodesh Kislev. It was in the month of Kislev. The month of Kislev. So it was in the month of Kislev. Okay. Now let's look in Perek Beis. Don't forget that the last words of the last Perek, of Perek Aleph, is a very intense prayer. Hatzlicha na la'avdecha hayom! So this is being prayed in Kislev, in response to all his sorirus that he had from the bad news about Yerushalayim and the people there. And he said, help me today. It sounds like he's ready to go in. He's ready to go in and ask the king. Probably the king drank wine on a regular basis. I was regularly pouring wine for the king. So he asked Hashem, help me today. So I would assume now the next pasuk where he discusses it with the king should be during the month of Kislev. And that's when the whole event happened up till now. Starts Perek Beis, Vayihi, and it came to pass. V'chodesh Nisan. In the month of Nisan. Now 1 minute, let's count on our fingers over here.
3.5 or 4.5.
There's some time passed. Well, good question. Was it a Ibrayor, not Ibrayor? But Kislev, Teves, Teves to Shvat, Shvat to Adar, and now we're in Nisan. That's quite a few months. We just heard him davening for help today. He wanted to take care of this on the spot. He was Zariz. He wanted to talk to the king today. Vayhi b'chodesh Nisan. And it came to pass in the month of Nisan, Shnas Esen LaTashasta, we're still in the beginning of the first parak, it was the Shnas Esen LaTashasta. It's the same year, 20th year to Dayavish, HaMelech, Yayin Lefanav. The wines were spread out in front of the king. Now, what does it mean wines were in front of him? What does it mean wines were in front of him? Wines were in front of him.
Sounds like a mishter.
Oh, it sounds like this wasn't just bringing him one bottle, you know, a cup to drink, but it was the eye in the fun of. Okay, so the Mepharshim say the king was in a good mood. He was having a drinking event. Okay?
Like his father.
Yeah, they had ways that they had Masar on this. The wine was in front of him. Yeah. It doesn't say what day of Nisan it was. You know, I don't know if anyone would be daring enough to say that being that, according to one opinion, well, let's get something clear. He's definitely the son of Achashverosh and Esther. Now, there's a big question, was he Jewish or not Jewish, right?
His mother was Jewish.
His mother was Jewish, that should make him Jewish. On the other hand, in the Zohar it says, in the Chidah, I have 12 explanations of how to understand this in practicality, that Esther was never touched by Achashverosh, so how did she have a child from him? So it wasn't Esther, it was she extracted her spiritual negative component and had it represent her and went to Achashverosh, and that was some type of demon that she was able to extract from herself. And that's what became pregnant and had Daryavish. So,
okay.
However you have to understand that, the Chidah has many different ways of explaining it, but the point being that according to that, he didn't have a Jewish mother. However you decide to deem the status of his demon mother. So, if he was Jewish, so then we know you have to have wine in front of you, especially on one of the nights of Nisan, which would be Leil HaSeder. So this would be very interesting. I would not be surprised if in the palace of Daryavesh he had a Seder. He probably was used to seeing Esther doing a very nice Seder. I can't imagine Esther wouldn't do a Seder in the palace once it was known she was Jewish. I'm sure she had a very nice Seder. You don't think that they're going to have a Seder this year in the White House? I'm sure they're going to have a Seder in the White House this year. What's the Shaila? They're not going to have a Seder?
Because what? There's no Jews in the White House.
Well,
he's not going to come for he's not going to visit the Shver for Leil HaSeder.
They'll definitely have Easter Sunday.
Okay, I don't know enough what's going on there, but you can imagine that you know someone's going to have, you know, Chabad lights the menorah over there, so I don't know, but maybe they were having a Seder over there. I don't know. I didn't see anyone that says it, but it's a strange pasuk. It doesn't just say he's bringing wine to him. It says they had the wine spread up in front of him in the month of Nisan. Okay. Vayhi v'chodesh Nisan shnas esri ma'atachshasa ha'melech yayin lefanav. V'esa es ha'yayin, so I did my job, I carried the wine, because that was his job. Nechemiah's job is to bring the wine from the barrel to the king to drink. V'esna la'melech, and I gave it to the king. V'lo ha'yisi ra lefanav. Now, this is a strange pasuk. I was not bad in the king's eyes. What does it mean? Lo hayisi ra lefanav. Doesn't sound like he was...
I didn't poison him.
Doesn't look like he was positively looked at. The king Rashi says, Dani lo hayisi ra gilios ra lefanav biro apanim. It means, in the past, I was not known to have a negative countenance when I was in front of him. Lo hayisi. In the past, I was not known to have a negative countenance, ra, lefanav, when I was in front of the king. Kim sameach v'tov lev, says Rashi. I always was the upbeat, cheerful one to come pour the wine for him. The atava now, ha'isi zoef, b'ro upon him. Today, I had a upset face.
So just today, I'm having a bad day.
Yeah.
He had to tell him something. He had to ask him something.
Let's see. Today he didn't have a good countenance. But the question is, and what was between Kislev, Teves, Shvat, Adar, this whole time, all we know is that from Kislev he's fasting, he's crying, he's praying, he's So suddenly today, he's Ralefanav. Okay, so the king, very, very interesting. Pasuk Beis. Vayomer li hamelech. This is very unusual. The way that Sefer Nehemiah, at least this part, is written, is in first person. Nehemiah is telling us the account of what happened. We're hearing it. This is the first. This is a Kli Rishon. We're hearing this. This is a biography. It's an autobiography. He's telling us about his own experience. So, Vayomer li hamelech, the king said to me, Madu apanecha ra'im, why do you look upset? Vata ein chachole, you're not ill. It's not like you have some virus or something. Okay, so far it looks like the king is taking interest in his well-being. When did you last hear the king took interest in the well-being of a butler? Perhaps if it was Zerubbabel, maybe if it's one of his old, trusted advisors, maybe he'd take more of an interest in him. But if it's just a butler, well, what does the king care? The king even notices. That's an unusual king.
Serving him food, I'd be a little nervous. If my waiter was like this...
Okay.
Somebody paid you to put something in the food.
Oh, exactly. Okay, so Rabbi Smith has picked up on the point over here. This is the well-known wisdom of body language. Everybody knows that when you check into El Al, they ask you a few weird questions, and then they let you go. Why? Because they're not really caring about how you answer the questions. They're looking at your body language. They want to hear how you talk. They want to hear how, if you're talking in a nervous way, if you're answering quickly or stuttering, or they want to see if you're hiding something. They want to hear if you have something up your sleeve. So the king says to him, you look a little bit off today. You're not sick. Ein ze ki im, this is nothing other than roa lev. Says Rashi, says the king, I see that there's only one explanation in this. There's roa lev over here. There's a bad heart. Says Rashi. Read you Rashi. Ein ha-maisa ha-zeh ki'im roa lev sheyesh b'libecha alai l'hamiseni b'sam ha-mavis b'shtiyas kos zeh. It must be that you have poisoned this cup and you want to kill me with this cup of wine. Rashi d'Ramasil Ein zeh in Pasuk Beis. Must be you're coming to kill me with this cup of wine, and that I'm sensing that you have a certain nervousness and unhappy look on your face that I'm not used to seeing on you. I'm reading your body language. You're trying to poison me. Now, that's not a good situation to be in. For the king of Babylon to think that you're trying to poison him, he doesn't have to, it's not very many steps between there and the beheading process.
In any case, he's going to drink it first.
He did drink it first.
So then how... So then, if you drank it, so what, now what? In between the drink and handing it to me, you're going to put poison in now?
Well, maybe it's a belated poisoning process.
Oh.
Or, yeah, maybe he slipped it in between.
He took a sip. He's drinking the whole thing.
Yeah. There was once a guy that came to the emergency room in Georgia, and when my father was there as a doctor, and the emergency room was doing 12-hour shifts, and this guy was rushing to the emergency room from the middle of nowhere. There was like one emergency room for a big, 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 big area. And he came in, and what's the problem? He had taken a lot of a certain medication because he thought that would do him in. Okay. And according to the amount of medication he took, that no one understood why he was here. So my father was asking him all different questions, and he asked him, you know, this medication makes a person thirsty, and you took a really big amount of it. Did it make you thirsty? Like, maybe you didn't really take this medication. Oh, yeah, it made me crazy thirsty. So what did you do about that? Oh, I just kept drinking cranberry juice, Ocean Spray cranberry juice. So my dad checks it up. He's like, cranberry juice is the immunity for this problem. So like, he had washed it all out with the cranberry juice. So as he got thirsty, he drank like another bottle because he had a whole store of cranberry juice in his house. So, you know, Rabbos Machshavos Belevish V'Atzmos Hashem Yitzakum. So, okay, so maybe he thought that he had thought of some immunity. But the point is that Nehemiah is in hot water right now. Va'ira harbe meod, and I trembled with tremendous fear. Ah, it's over. It's basically over. Go convince the king that even if he's not going to drink this cup, Go convince him that he misread your body language. The king knows what he's talking about. There's no convincing him. He thinks that you wanted to kill him. It's over. Va'omar la'melech. So he had to say something, otherwise it's over. Va'omar la'melech, I said to the king, ha'melech la'olam yichye. May the king live forever. Now, obviously the king likes to hear that, but we know the king will not live forever, but okay. May the king live, that's the way you say it, you know. It's long live the king. Madua lo yeir ufanai. Why should I not look upset? Asher ha'ir, the city based Kibros Avoisai, where my forefathers are buried, Chareva has been destroyed, Usharea uklu va'esh. And the gates of the city have been burned up by fire and consumed by fire. Now, apparently this was actually the real reason why he was looking sad. Why in the world did he look more sad today in Nisan than he did since Kislev? That we still have not found an answer to. But for some reason, at this point, it showed, and he's telling the truth. And sometimes when a person tells the truth, Rashi Reisman says, the truth is the best lie. Sometimes you come and ask, like, oh, should I say it? Should I not say it? Should I... The truth is the best lie. You know? If you want to get around something, you have a problem, sometimes telling the truth is the best way to convince somebody. Why? Because if you're saying it really from a place of truth, maybe the guy will believe you. So the king said, Al mazeh ata mevakesh, va'espalel elokei ha-shamayim. So the king said, okay, I believe you. I no longer suspect you're trying to kill me.
I have a question.
One second. So what are you asking me to do about it? I'll try to help you out. Well, that is a miracle. I've ever heard of a miracle. He just went within seconds from thinking this guy was coming to assassinate him and to give a directive to have him killed to turn around and say, is there anything I can do for you? Maybe I'll change my foreign policy. So what is that? Vaispalel says Rashi, the word vaispalel now is a turnaround in the middle of the pasuk. First of all, the king started speaking. Va'omar la'melech Va'yomer li ha'melech al mazeh ata mevakish. What are you asking for? And there's like a period over there. And then Nehemiah says about himself, vaispalel lokei ha'shamayim. So Nehemiah really quickly started davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is fascinating. Normally you don't hear what's going on by these people. Here's Nehemiah is telling us the story himself. So he says, so when the king said that, I started davening away to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I need Siyata Nishmaya now that you should accept what I'm about to say. Va'omar, we're talking about Omar Lamelech. Ima Lamelech Tov. That's the famous way of addressing a king of Babylon, right? That's how Esther used to talk to Achashverosh. Ima Lamelech Tov, right? If it strikes the king's fancy, Vim Yitav Avdecha Lefanav, the same way Esther said, and if I find favor in your eyes, Asher Tishlacheni El Yehuda, if you can send me on a mission as a representative of your kingdom, as a foreign diplomat, if you can send me to Eretz Yisrael, to the area of Yehuda, El Yir Kivros Avoisai Ve'evnena, I'd like that you should send me and give me the job of rebuilding the city of Yerushalayim. Okay, so we're going to leave you guys in suspense to see what the king is going to respond, but we still have to answer the question, what was going on, and Moshe Dov Vali has the answer. Why did this only happen in Nisan? I mean, obviously the ideas that are starting to come up in our mind is that it's the month of Geula. The question is exactly how does it play out, and we'll have to see what it is that the king is going to respond to this request of Nehemiah. Good book. Next week, everyone's invited this Monday to Bar Mitzvah downstairs in Chavetz Chaim, my son Yitzhak Yehuda, at 8 p.m. And on Shabbos, we have Bar Mitzvah. I think the shiur can go on as usual. Maybe we'll have a few more participants if some of the people from the family decide to stay. But I don't have any specific plans about the Shabbos, but I think that we can have a shiur at 8:30, Bez Hashem. Good book. Yes. Glad for coming.
They didn't have an Eretz Sheva back then. So it isn't like, oh, I just heard a news report there's something there. Why isn't the king saying, this is old news, this is 20 years ago. Now, what are you unhappy about today?
Give me the temple.
That he's saying the city's ruined.
Yeah, if Nehemiah is always happy, so why is Nehemiah, why is Tony unhappy?
He doesn't know they showed up and said we
right.
need to come.
Right, and also they showed up 3 months ago, at least. So we're trying to figure that out also. Right. No, that's part of this question. What's going on? We have to come back next week for the answer.
But the king is convinced. He doesn't turn on the radio and hear, oh, it was an incident yesterday.
Right. Interesting stuff.